Diamond Dan Gilbert's got his hand out again. He wants another $250 or $350 million from the Michigan taxpayer for his latest scheme to redo the Renaissance Center. But can we trust Diamond Dan? Is this idea even worth it? Let's compare. It took 1 year, 1 month, and 2 weeks to build the entire Empire State Building with private money in the middle of the Great Depression. It took 3 years and 8 months to build the entire Renaissance Center, all with private money and in the middle of the 70s oil embargo. It's taken 7 years so far for Diamond Dan to build this, the Hudson's Tower in downtown Detroit, an erector set with no opening date in sight. Normally you'd go bankrupt taking a decade to build a skyscraper, but not Diamond Dan. Not when the public hands you $200 million in cash, prizes, and property. And it's not even as tall as he said it was gonna be. I'm sorry, Dan. I've got my own taxes to pay. You should try it sometime. It's called capitalism.
Live from downtown Detroit. It's the No Bullshit News Hour with my main man, Charlie Liddell, and Karen Dubin.
Just in breaking news, double or bullshit.
Well, Karen, it's going to be the big money show today. It's Liberation Day, and joining us will be Rich Excel. Rich, he's a big swinging rich from Wall Street. He's professor of finance. Are you professor of finance at University of Illinois?
I am, yeah.
Yep, sir. 30 years as a money manager, the former managing partner at UBS Bank, writer of a really important financial substack called Stay Vigilant. And he also, hosts a fucking podcast. Everybody doing a podcast. What's the name of it, man?
So I do the podcast I do is for the CFA Society in Chicago. And we have two of them. We call one's Investment Exchange Forum and the other one's called Macro Matters. So we talk about the macro that matters, like money that matters. And the other one, we just cover different themes, etc.
All money matters. Okay, but before we get to that, the Big Money Show brought to you by Luke Nowacki. Telling you politicians lie to you, the media lies to you. How do you know if your investment statements are lying to you? You can jump in anytime here, Rich. Remember, you're not managing your wealth. That's some unseen guy working for a big bank, jockeying some unknown algorithm. That's correct, isn't it, Rich?
A lot of part, yeah.
There, sure. You, hey man, that's former managing director right there. So take my word here. But he's not making decisions based on what's best for you. He's making decisions on what's best for his bonus, gambling with your hard-earned dollars. You should know your money, man. That's why I work with financial specialist Luke Nowacki at Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. He'll tailor a financial plan specifically for you, from annuities to retirement accounts to college savings. He'll keep you up to date and always a phone call away. Let Luke Nowacki worry so you don't have to. That's Luke Nowacki at 248-663-4748. And after we don't get done with today's show, you're going to know why. You got to call him. Have you called him, Karen? Have you called him?
No, I have not. I talked to him the last time he was here, but I have not called him. But I am.
The market's moving up and down.
I know it is.
You got to get your sane retirement strategy.
Retire.
Yeah, at some point.
Who gets to retire?
I know. I'm worried about it. Okay, look. Before we get to Rich, the tariffs, Liberation Wednesday, this right here. I bought myself a single share of General Motors stock back in December. And so far, I've lost 9% on the deal, and I consider it one of the best investments I've ever made. Because this solitary share gives me voting rights and legal standing within the company. And if this rancid Renaissance deal gets done, I'm going to sue the shit out of GM. See, in Detroit, you see a lot of half-baked development deals. But this one is so bizarre, it defies financial sanity. As a shareholder, GM has a responsibility to maximize my financial gain. This project, the little we know about it, can't possibly do that. Developer Dan Gilbert and GM have come to the public asking for help with their $1.6 billion scheme to redevelop Renaissance 5 towers along the Detroit River. Gilbert would bring $1 billion to the deal. GM would toss in another $250 million. And you and me, the city and the state, we chip in another $275 million. GM, which owns the building, says its role in the project would simply be a philanthropic one. If the redevelopment ever made a profit, the company claims it would donate the money to charity. That is, according to Dave Masseron, GM's vice president of infrastructure and corporate citizenship. But I don't trust Masseron as far as I can throw him. Just ask the people of Flint. He's one of the main culprits who pushed the deadly water deal onto Vehicle City. Now, stick with me here, Rich. Profits are supposed to be maximized and distributed to shareholders. This is called what?
Capitalism.
No. And fiduciary responsibility. It's called
capitalism. Well, it is. It is.
Yes, thank
but
you.
But I would just throw out there, though, that a lot of companies, if you noticed, if you look at the business roundtable in D.C., et cetera, are pivoting to maximizing all stakeholders, not just shareholders. Mm-hmm. Which includes the community and includes employees and customers. Mm-hmm. So that's been the pivot that we've seen over the last, 10 years or so.
This is the way you can get some money from the public pot. Wink. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, according to people in the demolition business, the potential cost to demolish all 5 towers would be no more than $50 million, which includes asbestos remediation. But let's not quibble. Let's say the demo cost would be $100 million. Still, a $100 million loss does not equal a $275 million loss. Right, Rich?
I think that seems pretty fair.
It's good math. How much is the Renaissance Center worth? As is, we now have a comparable price. Tower 600 recently sold for $9.2 million in an online auction, and weirdly, we still don't know who bought it. But applying the same cost per square foot to the 5 towers GM owns, more or less their value would come in somewhere around $150 million. But let's not quibble. Let's say the sale price would land $50 million. Again, a $50 million profit does not equal a $275 million loss. The math is simple enough. Sell it or demolish it. One can't help but suspect the ultimate purpose of this backroom deal is to further enrich Dan Gilbert, one of America's richest people. Gilbert is currently building the Hudson's Detroit, a shabby taxpayer-funded skyscraper that is in its 8th year of construction. And Gilbert can't find tenants. His main competition is the Renaissance Center, which contains more than half of the city's vacant office space. Get the taxpayers to take those towers down, and Gilbert's problems are solved. The city does look better since bankruptcy, no doubt. How could it not? But at what cost and whose? Here's where my one measly share of GM comes in. The citizens of the Motor City got pickpocketed over the decades by the financially felonious, which eventually plummeted the city into insolvency. With the highest property taxes in the country and the only income tax and utility taxes in the state, Detroiters have no more to give. So now the cabal turns its insatiable lust toward the suburbs and the farms. It is they, the suburbs and the farms, who paid for Detroit's pensions over the last 10 years. And Flint's water, Gilbert's failed Q line, GM's EV boondoggles, the Detroit Institute of Arts, the Detroit Zoo, the smart bus system. Now comes the increased fees for hunting licenses, driver's licenses, even barber's licenses. It's all a license to steal your house. Now, I got a crazy idea. Let's try capitalism on the Renaissance redo. Otherwise, see you in court. And that's the riff. What'd you make of it, sir, professor? Give me a grade.
I'll give you a solid B. I'll give you a solid B.
I ain't taking this guy's class.
I think it's point counterpoint, right? What's like, I would say that you want to maybe present the other side a little bit more.
Go ahead.
That's okay. I think you did a good job.
Well, the reason being, one, the other, all we get is the other side. That's the price of an oligopoly here, and the media is not very strong. And if I was to say to you, I took it out for brevity's sake,
The original ask was $350 mm-hmm. million. Dollars. Now it's okay, you know, can't handle that and give me the cash all at once. Make it 275, 250 on a tax capture deal. It stinks, dude. Do you know, you're in Illinois, the yeah. One Chicago Square, that development?
Yeah, I'm you know, I've heard of it. Yeah, I'm not intimately familiar, but I've heard of it for sure.
Okay. Have you heard of it?
No.
Okay. It's got two towers. One's over 900 feet mm-hmm. and one's about 600 feet. That was built during COVID in 3 years. The property was $110 million. We gave it to Dan for a mm-hmm. dollar. We're the ones that went bankrupt, right?
Right.
It was $850 million. No public financing that I can find in this deal. They're saying this one, with the tallest tower, 600 and something, is $1.4 billion. That's your other side, Rich. That's your other side.
Fair enough, yeah.
I mean, okay. So anyway.
It doesn't seem like a particularly good deal.
Thank you. Thank you. Capitalism. We got to get back to it. Which is Liberation Day. We're talking tariffs. Let me begin. The wonder of Wall Street. They say that tariffs are a negotiating tactic. In your opinion, a negotiating tactic for what?
Well, the argument that tariffs are a negotiating tactic is the idea that the U.S. companies are not getting a fair deal across the world. And by imposing tariffs on foreign companies and foreign countries as they come into the much larger, much more lucrative U.S. market, that should lower tariffs across the world for U.S. companies as well. And then that's primarily when we talk about the negotiating tactic side of it, because the benefit to U.S. consumers presumably is access to cheaper goods that increase our standard of living, if you will.
Okay. But the main issue, it seems to be, is the hemispheric hegemony here, like NAFTA. And Jeff Racky, you know Jeff, you know, I was talking yeah. to him yesterday, another wizard of Wall Street, and he said, no. What this is all really about, what it's really about is stopping China's march. Like, for instance, they dump steel into Canada, right, and Mexico, and they buy it, and because they belong in NAFTA and there's tariff quotas and whatnot, we get all the dumped Chinese steel. We get the dumped Chinese cars, we get the dumped Chinese electronics. So this tariff is a way to stop that, because we can't, even with all the middlemen with their finger in it, we can't make steel that cheap. So Rich and Karen, you know, when I did the bridge story mm-hmm. and I showed you the international rail right. system, mm-hmm. I didn't know this, Rich, but there is a oceanic train being built. Yeah. In southern Mexico, from Oaxaca to Veracruz, about 200 miles. It's supposed to compete with the Panama Canal. So now you can have the goods come in down at the Yucatan Peninsula down there, and you railroad them across, put them on boats, and ship them to the port of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Right? This is a global game of...
For sure, yeah.
Chess. How do you... Everybody's worried about prices going up. How do you see that?
Well, I think that is the knee-jerk first order reaction of the effects of this. When you think about that, like the price of some goods will clearly go up, and so that's going to absolutely add to the cost of that. But how are consumers going to respond? Consumers probably will respond by not buying other goods, right? And so really, the second order effects, as you kind of start to think about it, are more probably a slowing down of growth in the economy. Which would ultimately pull down all prices. And so the first order effect would be certainly inflationary, particularly on the products or the products that come from certain countries or on certain products that we've seen with autos, et cetera. But the bigger concern, which what you're seeing a lot in the market now, particularly the bond market part of it, is this concern that we might have a recession as a result of this. And that would potentially bring down overall inflation, but maybe not in a way that consumers want, because no one likes to go through a recession, because recessions cause job loss, et cetera. So I think that's how you want to kind of think about those first order and second order effects of that. But I think the one point you brought up about the difficulty with imposing tariffs is, like, for instance, we might see China as the primary actor we want to work against. But does that mean you put tariffs just on China? Or as you said, do you have to put tariffs on Canada and Mexico because China has spent billions of dollars in putting factories and companies in China and Mexico, as well as in Vietnam, which is, you know, we, the third largest trade deficit we have is with Vietnam. And Vietnam today was sounding a ploy where they want to lower, eliminate all tariffs as a negotiating tactic, if you will. But are we really dealing with Vietnamese companies or U.S. companies or European companies doing, you know, manufacturing in Vietnam, or are those other just Chinese companies as well? And so that's I think where the difficulty of the tariff implementation really comes in.
Could there be a positive impact as it relates to the auto industry and manufacturing here as a result?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely some positive impacts that kind of go into this. I think first thing when you look at it is there, and we talked in the administration, talked about reciprocal tariffs. If you look at the average tariffs, you know, average tariffs in Europe are like 5%. In China, it's more like 7.5%. India, one of the worst offenders, like 17%, right? And so, and even in Japan, which is a good ally, is a little over 3%. And so the idea of reciprocal tariffs is like, if we put this tariff in and you lower yours, we'll lower our tariffs. You could see the case of goods prices coming down across the board from this notion of reciprocal tariffs. I think the notion of bringing production back to the U.S., that's already been happening. That's been happening really since post-financial crisis, 2014, 2015. We saw manufacturing CapEx ratchet up a level from where it had been during that era of globalization when everything was getting sent overseas. And then as we kind of went into, that ratcheted up, it almost kind of doubled on average for that period from 2014 to 2019. And then post-COVID, when companies have been trying to rationalize supply chains because we couldn't access certain critical goods, that growth of manufacturing spend, CapEx spend here in the U.S. has actually gone exponentially higher. So we're already seeing a return of manufacturing to the U.S. And so I think that is a trend that's very real, where companies want to make things closer to where they consume them. Yeah, and so now on an auto side, you could see that. I think the difficulty is obviously changing supply chains takes time, right? Mm-hmm. It took time to build those up and move those jobs to Canada from out of Detroit, and it's going to take, and or to Mexico out of Detroit, and it's going to take time to bring them back. And when they come back, will they come back to Detroit or will they come back to other states? I mean, that's the, you know, America might see that. You know, reshoring, if you will, but it may not reshore to where it was before. So there's adjustments that kind of go into all of that.
Now there's, I don't know if the price of the NAFTA block cars are going to go up, right? I don't give a fuck of a BMW. Like, you did it to us, we do it to you. But there's like the tariff rate quotas. So that means before the increased duties on products, on cars, Mexico and Canada combined are allowed to, as I understand it from Reuters, import about 2.5 million cars, an unlimited amount of pickup trucks, and $150 billion in parts before the increased tariffs go. So I don't know even how these are going to work, Rich, because are we still going to honor that? Or is it just 25% right now? Do you even know?
I don't even know the specifics. I don't think the specifics have really come out yet, to be honest.
And that bothers the market, does it not?
Uncertainty always bothers the market, without a doubt. And I think the other element of uncertainty is, what's an American car? Is a GM an American car if you're bringing in parts from Canada and Mexico? I mean, you've got, is a BMW a foreign car when they're making some of their series in South Carolina, or when Toyota actually has more parts made in America? And they're producing in Tennessee and places like that. Tesla's exactly. Probably the closest thing we have to an American, fully American car.
Tesla.
I think that's the other difficulty. Tesla, yeah.
Yeah, I got an idea. Let's burn it. What the fuck? I mean, it's people don't even know what they're talking about. It's,
I know, Charlotte.
The world's in flux.
It is, but they don't. And then I'm interested, and I know you said this all takes time. But you think about when there's an issue with a refinery, and that afternoon the gas prices are posted because it's not regulated and it's up to. What are we looking at in terms of consumer impact of these tariffs? You know, the timeline. How long is it estimated before we start to see the impact of that?
I've got an idea. We can ask Richard Excel, the Wizard of Wall Street.
That was my.
Yes.
Okay.
Who has a podcast?
Well, Karen, I think you bring a great point. The first effect, I mean, you're going to see companies starting to raise prices immediately, right? And I think, and even if that's, you know, they're doing that because of that uncertainty and they want to potentially cover, even though we've already seen a number of companies in a number of industries, getting in front of these tariffs and importing aggressively end of last year, early this year, to try to bring in at least some supply ahead of that. To the extent that companies can pass that on, they will certainly try to do so. It's a function of the competitive landscape, right? Certain industries have less competition than others. I mean, if you're talking about pure consumer products, you know, one store or one chain can decide to raise prices if they want, but as a consumer, if you want to go somewhere else, you have the right to do that. And we have a lot more transparency in what people charge these days. And so it's a little harder in some highly competitive industries, but in other ones where there's fewer suppliers, they will have the ability to potentially increase those prices, and you'll see that stair step up. And like when you talk about autos, it's not going to just impact, even though the tariffs are on new auto prices, from a competitive standpoint, you'll see used car prices go higher as well. And then therefore you'll see your auto insurance go up because it's going to be more expensive to replace cars that get into an accident or parts, et cetera. So you'll see it trickle through, prices going up across that entire ecosystem.
I'm just writing a note here. Remind me to come back to you on it, which is, I don't want the answer now. I want it in a minute. Do you agree with this strategy? Is it a good strategy? Macro. I'll let you think on that. That's a big one. But what I want to get to before I forget it, I was just looking. Of course, the economy is going to slow down, and it doesn't even have anything to do with tariffs. You know what it has to do with, brother? Is Doge. When you're trying to root out government waste fully, correct me if I'm wrong, 8% of economic activity in the United States, 8% comes from the deficit spending of the federal government. Is that about right, Rich?
That's the amount of debt that we have out there for sure. If you want to look at spending, if you want to take federal spending is about 20, almost 24% of GDP, state and local is another 21%. And if you just look at the compliance and regulatory costs that companies spend just to comply with the rules and regulations, it's another almost 7%. So you're looking at 51% of spending in the economy is related to the government.
So you said 24% of economic activity is federal government spending.
Correct.
Okay. And if you took $2 trillion out of it, it's about 4%. If Doge can find $1 trillion, automatically economic activity decreases 4%. That's a fucking recession for sure. So it might be coming, but I feel at this point, it's got to be done. You got to take the medicine and get off steroids. You agree?
I would, so if you just give it some like long-term perspective, and this is something I was actually just talking about on a podcast with a good friend, and talking about government spending, we were talking about almost 24%. 15 years ago, it was like 15%, right? Just after the financial crisis, it really started to ratchet up. If you go back 100 years ago, right, and maybe that's a little out of context, but we talk about President McKinley and people like that when we name mountains, et cetera, it was 2.5% of GDP. And so you could do tariffs and literally fund your government when the GDP, the government spending was 2.5%. Now you even if you do 25% tariffs because of how much trade is as part of the economy, you're not going to raise 25%. So you're not going to be able to pay for government by using tariffs. And so there's other reasons that we do that. But I think to your point, the biggest issue here is government spending. And so when you talk about recessions, the last few years, one of the things you'll ask a lot of people on Wall Street got things wrong, right? They anticipated a recession because you look at consumers and private companies and things were not that great. A lot of the measures we looked at were actually below average, but the GDP numbers that we got from the government were actually quite positive. And that's because fiscal stimulus was on the order of 7 or 8%, like you're talking about. So the fiscal stimulus, the government spending increases on a yearly basis were such that that was what was leading to the, you know, to the growth in the economy. In fact, over the last 3 years, 51% of all job growth has come from government or tangential to government types of job growth, et cetera. So now if you cut spending, which I would argue you absolutely have to cut spending and shrink the size of government, because we have $9 trillion alone of debt to issue to pay for the government right now. And that's unsustainable.
Hold on. This is because this is I'm so happy you're here, because when I watch news, or they pander to us like we're babies, our prices are going up. Mm-hmm. What he just said about we have $9 trillion in debt to about $7 trillion to reissue, and we got to raise $2 trillion for the new spending. So what you're saying, Rich, is the debt's rolled over. We need to issue more debt to finance the old debt. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. And when you look at the amount that this, the thing is, leverage or debt in and of itself isn't a bad thing. And I'm not saying the government, just in general, right? So think about it. You take out a mortgage to buy a house. Is that bad debt? Well, no, not if you can service your mortgage. It allows you to get into a bigger house at more, you know, higher cost than you otherwise could. Now, the problem with government debt is that when it's not allocated properly, when it's misallocated, and when it's growing faster than the economy is growing, it becomes unsustainable. And so the fact that we have this amount of debt, which is now 130% of GDP, and we have to fund it, and the amount that we pay just in interest is larger than even defense spending. And we're only growing on a real basis at around 3%, but debt's going up at 7-8%. That's unsustainable, and that leads to outcomes that you know, where there's collapse. In fact, there's been a lot of academic work that suggests that any country, when the GDP gets above 100%, goes into some sort of financial crisis. And right now, the only ones that are there that haven't had crisis yet would be Japan and the United States. And arguably, Japan has had a crisis, but a different type. It didn't collapse in 1 year. It's had 30 years of no growth. And so the U.S. is the next kind of guinea pig, if you will, to try to assess that. And there are Keynesians that would argue that it doesn't matter if you have too much debt, because if you issue in your own currency, you can afford it. And you'll know when you've issued too much, because inflation goes up, which frankly we have seen, of course. But I think most other people would look at it and say, we just have far too much debt and it's unsustainable. And that's where I think Treasury Secretary Bessent, who the market loves him because he comes from the market, has told everyone to focus on the 10-year yield and not the stock market, because if Trump's policies are successful, the bond market will allow them to issue new debt at lower prices.
Yeah.
And so if the 10-year yield goes lower, that's the bond market saying, we agree with the tariffs, we agree with the cutting of government spending, we agree with the lower taxes and the deregulation, because we think that leads to short-term pain, yes, but long-term gain. The stock market clearly won't like that, because that's going to be very negative for earnings. And the stock market was overvalued anyway. And so there's maybe a more painful adjustment in the stock market. And frankly, in Trump's first term, he only cared about the stock market and told us about that all the time. Yep. I think you see a change in that narrative. And so right now the bond market is saying, yes, there will be a recession, but this is short-term pain for long-term gain potentially. And so I think that's the positive that you would see. But I think it's that the tariffs are just a means to an end. It's a readjustment of global trade. It's getting away from that Washington consensus that we've had since the end of World War II, where U.S. Economy was open to all of our global peers, and they would sell whatever they wanted here, and they would recycle their dollars into the U.S. bond market to keep rates lower, so we could have nice mortgages and buy more stuff and have a lot of cheap goods. And I think American consumers, more so than even foreign companies and foreign countries, have decided that that's probably ended, and we have to move on from that. And so I think when we look at that, Judge Bessent saying, "Hey, we need to kind of change that consensus," and that's what we're doing.
So we got $9 trillion hanging out there, and we can't find people to buy it, which means you got to offer more interest. That's the bond market, right? Mm-hmm. As far as modern monetary theory, you just keep printing because you control the presses, so it doesn't matter. But when inflation starts to happen, their only answer is to raise taxes to pull the money out of the system, which means you can't buy anything. You're getting taxed and you have high inflation. So it's now or fucking never, which brings me to my buddy Les Gold of American Jewelry and Loan. What was the name of Les's show?
What was it? Pawn Stars.
Pawn Stars. Did you ever see Pawn Stars?
Yeah, I have. Yep.
Yeah. So Les is a really brilliant guy. He's my street level economist, you know, and I was talking to him about gold. And gold is up in 2 years, 75%. It's almost doubled. I asked Les why. He goes, well, uncertainty, inflation, tariffs, and the U.S. debt. And he says he notices there's a lot more loans he's given out than redemptions, people coming to get it. So he thinks this strategy long term is necessary, that he agrees with the tariffs and he agrees with finding the government waste. Do you agree with my street level economist, Les Gold? And by the way, what kind of pawnbroker is named Les Gold?
I thought that was just his TV name.
It should be Mo Gold.
The boy, he named his son Seth, and I'm like, you should have named him Mo.
No.
We're in the consensus here.
No.
Mo Gold.
No.
Do you agree with Les's estimation of it?
I agree with Les in the gold market is absolutely giving us a very strong signal that that we're in an unsustainable situation and that those dollars that you have are not worth as much. I'll give you a couple stats on gold that you'll appreciate. If you would have bought gold or bought the S&P in 2000, so this century, let's look at the performance this century, gold has massively outperformed the S&P, which has gone up considerably more so than any other stock market in the world. But a better investment has been in gold than in stocks. And I think the gold bugs would tell you how gold holds its value relative to the dollar. If you looked at, again, going back 100 years, right, the average house in the United States in 1925, you could have bought with 10 gold bars. If you look at 2025, you can buy the average house in the United States with 10 gold bars. Mm-hmm. However, we know that the price of the average house in the United States has gone up immensely over that period of time, which just tells you that the dollar has been devalued or debased by that much over the last 100 years, but it hasn't been debased in gold. And that's the argument that gold bugs would give you why you should hold gold.
Everybody should hold some gold if you can, and you should call Luke Nowacki. And speaking of gold, you've got 2 weeks left to get down to the American Coney Island and eat those golden Pacific Pollock Lenten fish sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
So good. After the show last week, a guy was listening to it, and he ran down here. I go, it's Friday, only Friday. So Friday, downtown at the corner of Michigan Avenue and Lafayette, they're absolutely delicious. I'm not going to go on about them. And if you want a Coney kit, I'm going to send you one. I'm going to send you, because you're in Chicago or, you know, Champagne, and you guys think you do hot dogs. You don't do hot dogs. I'm going to send you a Coney kit, Rich, okay?
Okay.
All right.
And then we'll side by side with the Coney dog and the Chicago dog.
Oh, it's kind of bullshit. These are sausages. Oh, listen, you're a big investment type guy. If you're looking for a safe and socially responsible real estate investment, consider contacting Archangel Senior Management. Senior living, one of the fastest growing markets in America. And Archangel offers small communal living for senior citizens in homes right inside our neighborhoods. So they provide care. You invest in the home. You get a return. You own the home. It's genuine. The owners are local, and Archangel has Overwatch. If interested, write this down, Rich. Call Joe LeBlanc at Archangel at 989-614-0416. You're not writing. I'll do it again.
I've got a photographic memory.
989-614-0416.
And his last name is Excel, so.
Yeah. Oh, and I think I talked to Joe. I'm going to have him on in 2 weeks, him and his partner, because the end of life care in this country absolutely has to change. We learned that from COVID. And in 2 weeks, it'll be the 5-year anniversary of Whitmer's boneheaded idea to take infected old people and put them in nursing homes with healthy old people. It was a grass fire. The science is in. Everybody knew it then. We need to discuss where we're going. Well, you know, when it rains, the power goes out. And when the power goes out, the internet goes out. When the internet goes out, I call my friend Matt and Bernie at XG Service Group. Look at Bernie here on his hands and knees, giving it everything he's got. Look at that man crack. So busy, He forgot to wear a belt. There's Matt right there getting the board together. That's 734-245-4100. If you need Matt and Bernie to come take care of your voice over internet, your security cameras, off-campus access control, Wi-Fi, and cameras for homes and business, they'll design it for you. You got restaurants, they do drive-through systems, railroad cameras for public safety, total wireless camera systems for your home and business. Yeah, that's right. Call XG Services at 734-245-4100. Okay. Now, speaking of Doge, bro, did you see the clip of Antonio Gracias and Elon Musk, a couple of billionaires, really intelligent guys, rooting around inside the Social Security Administration? This is from the I Told You So file. We'll roll it.
When we saw these numbers, we were like, what is this? In 21, you see 270,000 people, goes all the way to 2.1 million in 24. These are non-citizens that are getting Social Security numbers.
Yeah, this is a mind-blowing chart.
Yeah, just this literally blew us away. Like, we went there to find fraud, and we found this by accident. The defaults in the system from Social Security to all of the benefit programs have been set to max inclusion, max pay for these people, and minimum collection. That's what's happening. We found 1.3 million of them already on Medicaid, as an example. We've gone through on every benefit program we went through, we found groups from this particular group of people, this 5.5 million people in those benefit programs. And then what was really, really disturbing us was why. We're asking ourselves why. Right. And so we actually just took a sample and looked at voter registration records. And we found people here registered to vote in this population, yes.
And who did vote?
And we found some by sampling that actually did vote. And we have referred them to prosecution at the Homeland Security Investigation Service.
Yeah.
Already. That is already happening. Right now.
So, first of all, if you're a non-citizen, by federal law, correct me if I'm wrong, Rich, that you're not entitled to these federal programs. Is that right?
I'm not a law professor. I don't know, but I wouldn't think so.
So, if you come here legally with a permit, you're given a Social Security number so you can pay into it. But if we're importing a bunch of cheap labor who's never paid into it, why are they getting max benefits? I'm so against this. I'm so pro for my people. We live in Detroit, and people trying to find housing,
right,
and get vouchers and, you know, going to the food pantries, and the median, mm-hmm, you know, the bell curve like this, mm-hmm, right in the middle, the majority of the 50% point make $19.24 an hour. At $15 an hour, you're considered the, you know, low income. Mm-hmm. You're eligible for these stamps and stuff. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
And what do we just do?
Who knows, Charlie? But that's what we've been talking about. I mean, before, we were talking about when people were coming here and they were able to get their resources, and they were being put up in hotels and, you know, given gift cards or whatever so that they could. And people were like, well, what about us? What about the people who are already here that are struggling to survive and trying to find a job and trying to take care of their families? Like, why? And this isn't a us versus them, but I think us should be first before them.
100%. So, Professor, I'm looking for, like, you gave me a B. I'm looking for a B plus here, because now you add in
extra credit.
Yes, this is the extra credit part, which is, let me explain, sir. I'm begging for a grade. The precious little that we have now, the revenue, the recurring tax base, is being diverted to millionaire and billionaire developers for complexes we don't need. So it's just it's a cry from the Midwest. We need to radically alter things. And I think the media needs to start helping us see the bigger picture.
But they won't do that, Charlie. And that's what I wanted to ask Rich this. So you've given us a 30,000 foot view of what this is like. To the average person that's listening, what does that mean to them when they say, God, you know, what? I've never heard this before. I've never had this or heard this conversation at this level. What does that mean for them, or what should they do differently?
Good one.
In terms of, are we talking about tariffs, Doge?
Just
the overall, to hear this, because this conversation isn't taking place anyplace else.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you get the numbers, you hear the sound bites, but to the average resident or consumer that's hearing this for the first time, how should they respond?
Well, they should be pissed off for sure, right? Because they've been lied to. But I think you know, when you think about it, like, you know, you're just trying to get through day to day, right? Mm-hmm. So you talk about the fraud and waste that Doge is potentially and has seemed to uncover on quite a few fronts. That just makes things more expensive for them on a day to day basis. That's why that $15 or the $19 an hour, which back when I was in college or whatever, that would have been a really good hourly wage. Nowadays, it does, as you mm-hmm. say, and then now you can get food stamps with that, and that's because all of this excess and all of this fraud and waste has led to just price levels going up so much that it's hard to afford things, right? And now you talk about the short term aspect of tariffs that might cause things to be a little bit more painful, and the risk is that another risk that they would want to be aware of is just that you potentially, if there's a recession, you will potentially start to see job losses too. Of course, the job losses we've seen so far have largely been in DC, and I don't think anyone really cares about that. But I think for that person in Detroit, the person in Chicago, that potentially could come home to them. So I think, and that's why what we'll see is consumers have a lot of uncertainty too. And so I think right now the right thing to do is really just kind of bunker down because we don't know how this is going to play out. But I think the confidence you can potentially have, as I said, that short-term pain, long-term gain is like, if we are able to root out a lot of this fraud and waste, and we are able then to potentially to use the funding from tariffs and other savings from Doge to lower tax bills and bring back jobs to the United States, there is a story that to be told that is potentially much happier ending. But I think it does cause him, because this has been something that's been occurring for decades, not just months or years. It is a painful readjustment. So they just have to be ready for that and be prepared for that and do whatever you can to bunker down, because it could be ugly for a while.
Yeah. I mean, it's time. Here's what we're going to end up doing. We're going to end up scamming. This actually destroys the fabric of society. Like you said, $19 an hour, you're eligible for food stamps. So you got a partner, right? You and your woman, and you got kids. Don't get married. Mm-hmm. Scam. Like, I live here with my kid, and she claims she lives here with her kids. And that way you can still make your $19 an hour and get your food stamps. And actually, because think about what that is. We pay the highest auto insurance mm-hmm. in the country, pay the highest property tax in the country, utility tax, all the stuff we were talking about. So you got to cheat. You just have to cheat, and you don't get married to survive. This is no way to run society.
I want to ask you this, Charlie, as well as Rich. Is this a political move, or is this an economic move for Trump, because he can do this, he can impose these tariffs without congressional approval? Or, and I mean, is this a political move, or is this truly an economic efficiency move?
My answer is he doesn't have to do it. He can just mm-hmm. prattle on and do whatever he's doing, and this is gonna cost him. But I think it's time. Like Rich is saying, it's been decades,
right?
Even if they're not effective, like, some movement needs to occur, because we're going down the drain and somebody's got to put a stopper in it. I give it to you, Rich.
I don't think it's political. I think Trump's using a lot of political capital to do this. And I think that if he was a political animal, he wouldn't be doing this. I mean, he'd be doing what other politicians have, and that's kicking the can down the road and not addressing it. So I think he fundamentally believes that American consumers have been getting screwed, and he wants to change that. And I think you're seeing that across a number of different things. Now, just from a political standpoint, though, something to note is that he's obviously allowed and able to do things with executive order. Mm-hmm. And he's invoking that on a number of these fronts. However, ultimately, he also wants to cut taxes too, right? And the Congressional Budget Office has to score that. And there's rules that such that if you're going to cut taxes, you have to pay for it somehow. These tariffs that he's announcing now by executive order don't count towards that. They would only count towards that if Congress comes in and approves them. And so he has to get Congress to, he can announce them now and impose them now. And that could certainly start to, adjust mm-hmm. things in terms of rebalancing trade. But for him to be able to use that to pay for tax cuts to help consumers, the Congress has to get on board too and finally step up and do something. And they haven't necessarily shown the willingness to do that in the past. And so it'll be interesting to see, because it will be difficult for them politically, and they may pay a price, but it does seem to be the right thing to do.
Pay the fucking price. Okay, I'm going to show you. The little guy, government assistance, money for the billionaires to develop. This, because I know you got to go, Rich. I just want to get this in. I want you to see it. This piece by Red, Detroit Red, one of our brothers here at the No Bullshit News Hour, was from 2 years ago. I want you to remember that when you watch this. From 2 years ago. You ready, Mark?
Yep.
Let's play it.
Trailers for sale or rent.
Put me out of the house, don't divorce me.
Fillet for 50 cents. No phone.
All I know is what I got.
No pet.
Started from the bottom.
I ain't got no cigarettes. But 2 hours of pushing broom. That's a 8x12 4-bedroom. I'm a man of means, by no means. King of the road.
I'm calling in regards to, I want to get one of the apartments down in the skyscraper when it's done. And I know it's supposed to be some low income housing available, and I got my Section 8 voucher. So I was wondering, what do I need to do to apply for one of the apartments?
Man, staying at the Normandy can turn from a short-term stay to a lifetime sentence, and I ain't trying to do that. I think I found my way up out of this place.
I thought maybe I could get something new in the new skyscraper when it's done, looking at Canada. And with low income, I got my Section 8 voucher and everything. I'm ready to go.
What's going on with that building? I don't even know if they're going to have any type of housing in that building. They're still 2 years out.
Oh, I thought when they went to the city with the plans, they said it was going to be residential with a 20% low income.
Yeah, we don't have any information on the husband's side of this now.
Man, skip that. I'm about to go down here and find out what's going on. You ain't going to tell me you don't know nothing for my Section 8 voucher. Go down here and talk to somebody in person.
So after not getting much information on the phone, I decided it'd probably be better if I go down there and try to talk to somebody in person. But you know what they say, excuse over the phone, truth in your face. Oh man, I can't wait. I'm wanting to live right there. Yep, that's it. High rise, look at Canada. Yeah, I can't wait, baby. Moving on up. Yeah, buddy. Woo. I'm gonna use this voucher. I'm gonna be living good. They're gonna be wondering, how did I make it happen? Thanks, Dan. 20% low income housing. I can't fucking wait. Hell yeah. Hey, what's up, fellas?
What's up?
Hey, I'm waiting on these apartments to get done. I wanted to move in. Y'all know when they're gonna be finished?
One year. What they say.
Oh man, I hope they do it quicker than that. My Section 8 voucher is gonna expire by then. That 20% low income living. I'm looking, I got mine, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
All right, appreciate you, fellas.
Yeah, have a good one.
You too now. Hey, what's good, brother? Slow motion. I'm wanting to know how long before it be done. I'm ready to move on in. I got my Section 8 voucher and everything.
Almost 2 years.
2 years? Oh, shit, my voucher will be expired by then. They told me 20%. How's that? I'm going to have to reapply for Section 8.
You're going to have to in 2 years.
In 2 years. God damn it. Let me go over here and see if I can go ahead and reserve it then. And take a Section 8 voucher reserve or something. Thanks a lot, brother. Yeah, fuck this. Let me go to the office and check with the office. These guys don't know what they're talking about. Hell, it took them 7 years to put a building together. I don't even know. You got no timing. I'll find out. Make my Section 8 voucher expire. Get some answers here. Hey, how you doing today?
Good.
Is there someone in the office I can speak with? How you doing today? I want to speak to somebody. I got my Section 8 voucher, and I want to reserve my apartment in the skyscraper when it's done. How long will it be before it's finished?
What are you doing here?
I just told you. I just asked you how long will it be finished because I want to reserve my Section 8 apartment in the skyscraper. Dan said it'll be low.
Go there and dust them there.
Go where? To the site? I was over there.
Where is that?
Nobody can tell me anything? How you doing? You all right? You know about the skyscraper over here?
I do, but I can't speak to that. You have to go with Bedrock.
I had to go with Bedrock?
Yes.
Now, where's Bedrock at?
They are down the road on Woodward.
Down the road on Woodward?
If you Google their address, you'll see it.
Okay, because I'm just trying to see if I can reserve my Section 8 apartment for the 20% low income that's going to be in there. So I'm trying to get a jump start. I want to be up on the penthouse looking at the Canadian side.
Bedrock's the folks you need to see.
All right. So, but how long do you think it'll be done for us? Finished? Can't answer that?
Nope. Say Bedrock. Everything needs to go through Bedrock.
Bedrock. All right.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate you. I ain't let my Section 8 expire. I need to get my apartment. I want to live downtown, too. Shit. So after leaving the construction office, that one guy told me where to go. That's pretty cool of him. I got to thinking, damn, why was the other guy such an asshole?
What? What you doing here? Well, he's asking you a question.
And then I couldn't even understand him. At least you could be an asshole that I could understand.
And you can go there and ask him there.
Go where?
Okay, go where?
I was over there.
Well, that where is that?
After walking around a city that has Gilbert's name tattooed across itself, I finally found the place. I'm doing all right. I want to know who I talked to about reserving my apartment down in the new skyscraper.
Reserving it?
Yeah, this Bedrock?
Yeah, this is
right, the skyscraper down the street?
The one that's there on building?
Yeah, it's supposed to be 20% low income. I got my Section 8. I want me a damn penthouse in the skyscraper. So I'm trying to see who I talk to.
You can give us a call and we can transfer you to the right people, but they don't work in this building.
Oh, they don't work?
This is just the headquarters.
Wait a minute, this is the headquarters, but they're not in the headquarters?
No.
Okay.
They have to work because they're in the buildings and other stuff.
So how long before you think the building, the skyscraper done? Because I don't want my voucher to expire.
The beginning of next year.
Beginning of next year? So less than a year.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, because I only get 6 months on this voucher. I don't need it expiring on me. You say just give them a call. Is this number right here?
Yeah, you can call me there, and then I can transfer you to the right people.
Okay. I just got one more question for y'all.
Yeah.
So I was kind of expecting to move in today.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Not going to happen, is it?
No. Mm-hmm.
Section 8 is going to run out here in 6 months, so it's not happening.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, they don't do the same thing.
All right, thank y'all. Looks like I'm back at the goddamn Norman. 1, 2, shit, at this rate, 5 years. Fuck! King of the world.
That was 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And it's at least another 2 years before it's done. And remember they're going to do the low-income 80-20? The 20's gone now.
Mm-hmm.
It was the old bait and switch.
It always is.
Well, Professor, what did you make of that? Red's pretty good, isn't he?
Red's pretty good.
Richard was trying not
Red
to laugh.
Red couldn't get a straight answer. Unbelievable.
That's so can I get the B+?
You can get the B+. Yeah.
Oh, my man! My man. Hey, listen.
You can thank Red for that.
That's why I partnered with him, bro. Stupid. Before I say goodbye, just let everybody know where they can follow your work because it's really tight. It's really important.
Yeah, the best place you can is on Substack. My Substack is called Stay Vigilant. So stayvigilant.substack.com. Just check it out, and you can. It's free. I don't have any paywall or anything like that. And then on any podcast app, it's the podcasts I do are under the CFA Society Chicago. And so you can find I do a couple different ones, and they're on any podcast app that you have, and so you can find them there. I'm recording one right after this. That's why I gotta leave. But we're talking about the different things that are impacting the markets and impacting your investments. And so we're trying to educate and just inform people so that they can prepare and navigate through these uncertain times.
Yeah, and what's your X handle?
It's at Excel Richard.
E E-X.
E-X-C-E-L-L, Richard.
Yeah, I was on there yesterday. I'll leave it with this for regular folks who have a something, little portfolio of some kind, or even your you know, your 401k, because you can you can go really conservative or you can go really wild. This is what Richard wrote. Quality portfolios handles uncertainty. And that's have a, if you're a regular person just looking to get through, have a balanced portfolio. You agree with that, sir? Because you wrote
it. I totally agree with that. Yep.
All right. Thank you, bro. It was really illuminating. Appreciate you.
Thank you guys for having me. Good luck.
Okay. Later.
Karen? That was good. No, that was very good. I mean, we've been talking about money for a long time, and now we're seeing all these things come to fruition. We've talked about no matter how much you make or how much you don't make, call Luke, talk to somebody, secure your bag. So, yeah, it's all coming. You're right.
Yeah, it's moving. All right, we'll see you next week.